I would like to start out this morning by saying a thank you to all of the folks that have moved down closer to the front. I know it's out of your comfort zone, but we appreciate very much you doing that, making more room for our guests. Also, thank those who came to our early service today. We had 26 there this morning, so it was a good service, and I want to thank those folks for being there. Now, I spoke here some time ago. I told you you wouldn't remember what I spoke about, but that's something I wanted you to remember about me. What type of guy am I? What am I? Car guy. Thank you. I'm a car guy. So now let's see the first slide. I'm a car guy. That's a car. Who can tell me what car this is? Thunderbird. What year? 57. Yeah, that's the last of what they called the baby birds, if you will. They made those 3 years, 5, 6, and 7, before they went to a big car. Next slide. That's me and my beautiful bride sitting there in the car. That's about as close as we ever got to driving it. Never got to put it on the road. Had to sell it. Anyway, that's wanted to get your attention, so hopefully I've got that. We can take that one off. Now, if I said to you, life is, and I put a blank in there, what would you say it is? In the early service, people are a little more likely to speak up. They said life is hard, life is good, life is tough. But what we're going to look at today, and I get to fill in the blank since I'm leading this, life is complicated. Whether we like to admit it or not, life is complicated. Doesn't matter what age you are, man or woman, what nationality, it doesn't matter. Life is complicated, and we learn more about that as we go through life. We seen last week, Jasmine came forward. Her life is complicated. Miss Gail came forward. Why? Because her life is complicated. We all have complications in our life, some more than others, and we never know when it's going to happen. But complications are a part of life. What I want us to look at today in God's Word, to see if there's something there that can help you and I, as we face these complications, can help guide us through them. And I want to look at the life of a man by the name of Joseph. And as we look at Joseph's life, we can almost hear him say, looking back, he might say, my life is complicated, my God is faithful. My life is complicated, my God is faithful. Now, the story of Joseph, it's in the book of Genesis, and I hope you have your Bibles with you today, and that's where we're going to be working from, is the book of Genesis. And you don't have to go to any other book. We're going to stay in that book. So I'm trying to make it easy for you and especially for me. Joseph's story is a very rich story and a lot of valuable lessons. And we could take hours and even days to go through this. I only have today. So I'm going to try to get you out of here in time to where you can get home for dinner tonight, hopefully. But anyway, the book of Genesis covers about 50 chapters, and we're going to be looking at Jacob and his 12 sons, and we're actually going to start out in Genesis 37. And Jacob, as we all know, he would become the father of the Israelite nations, and his name was later changed to Israel. He had 12 sons. And his families would be the 12 tribes of Israel. Genesis 37 zooms in on one of those 12 sons. His name is Joseph. Very early in life, he learns that it is complicated. On his way to the statement, my life, there are about 40 years of complications. And we're going to kind of do a little whirlwind tour through these to Genesis 37 through 50. And we're going to look at the ups and the downs in Joseph's life. We'll start out with a down. He's almost the youngest of 12 sons. And in your life, you were, in your family, you were the baby until another child was born, unless you were the only child. And this has been called middle age syndrome. So I want you to think just a second. Are you one of those middle children? You're not the oldest and you're not the youngest. Is that, if that's true in your family, raise your hand. Okay, quite a few of you. I was the oldest of three boys, and my middle brother seemed like he was always had the roughest time being that middle child. So I'm sure a lot of you can relate to that. And Joseph, he was not the oldest, and he was not the youngest. He was next to the youngest. Well, he found out that this caused complications in his life. Now, on the upside of Joseph, he becomes the favorite. And probably most of us in here would not admit if we were the favorite child of our parents, and I'm sure some of us probably were. But somehow he becomes the favorite, and his dad chooses Joseph as the favorite. And we see this in Genesis 37, verse 3. It says, now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. And I had to think about the song that Dolly Parton did, Coat of Many Colors. So here is Joseph. He's riding high at 17 years old. He's his dad's favorite son. And he had the robe to prove it, in case his brothers forgot. He was going to keep them informed that he was the favorite son. But what does this do? It leads to complication in his life. Joseph, he had a dream, and he shared this with his brothers. It was a prophecy of what was to happen years later. And basically that he, the younger than those 10, would be in a position of authority over them. Now, how do you think this went down? Not very well with the 10 older ones than him. Not very well at all. So they decide, we've had enough of him. So they decide to get rid of him. And we see in Genesis 37, 19 through 20, they say, here comes that dreamer. They said to each other, come now, let's kill him and throw him in one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams. But Reuben, the oldest of the brothers, they thought a little better of it and said, well, maybe we better not go to quite that extent. So they took this little fancy robe he had and perhaps some other clothing, threw him in a well, and then decided to sell him to a band of slave traders on their way to Egypt. And I'm sure Joseph is probably saying, well, why didn't you just kill me instead of doing all of this? You know, this is not a very good outlook on life for me going through this. Now let's go to the upside. Joseph is sold to a man named Potiphar, who is a captain of Pharaoh's guards. And Joseph made such a good impression on Potiphar that he ends up putting him in charge of his entire household. And we see this in Genesis 39, 4 through 6. Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So he left in Joseph's care everything he had. With Joseph in charge, He did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. That's leading a pretty simple life, and that's really putting Joseph in charge of everything. But this leads to another complication. There's a downside to this. Joseph, we can probably imagine, he was a young man. He was handsome, probably very well built. Who in the household would notice him? Potiphar's wife. And she did everything she could to seduce him. And one day, and we see this in chapter 39, verse 10, he is accused of attempted rape. And I won't read that whole passage, but what she tries to seduce him. She grabs his cloak. He runs away, and she holds on to his cloak. Then, so she won't look bad, she tells everybody, he came in here to go to bed with me, and then when I screamed, he ran away. Well, do you think her husband would believe what she said? Absolutely. And we see this in verse 20. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. So here Joseph is in his 20s, sitting in jail, convicted of attempted rape, and it's his word against the captain of the guard's wife. Who would you believe? Not looking too good for Joseph at this time. However, things do look up. When he's put into prison, may have been the first thing he thought about, I got to get out of here. And I immediately thought about Andy Dufresne. You watch Shawshank Redemption. He made a plan to get out of prison. Took him a long time, but he did get out. But not Joseph. Guys like Joseph always rise to the top. And we've probably known people like that in our lifetime. Perhaps you're one of them. I'm not, but Joseph, he's one of these guys that always rises to the top, and even in prison. And we see this in Genesis 39, verses 22 and 23. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Things are looking up again for Joseph. And while he's in there, the king had evidently got mad with his cupbearer and his baker and had them put in prison. And Joseph, he becomes good friends with these guys. And he thinks that's a good thing, but guess what? Going to lead to another complication in his life. So now we're going to see the downside. These guys had a dream. Guess what? Guess who could interpret that dream? Joseph. Bad news for the baker, because he told him, you're going to be hanged. And I just, you know, that's not too good. But for the cupbearer, he has good news. You're going to get out of prison. 3 days. And we see in Genesis 40, verse 14, but when all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness, mention me to Pharaoh, and get me out of this prison. Get me out. And 3 days later, the cupbearer is released. And I'm sure Joseph is thinking, this is my ticket out of here. I'm getting out. But we see in Genesis 40, verse 23, the chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. Wonder how many nights, days, weeks, Joseph is thinking just any day I'm going to be released. And then he finally realizes his friend had forgotten him. This probably had to be a really low point in Joseph's life. Here's a man sitting in prison, convicted of a crime he didn't commit. He's done everything he can to assure his release. And he realizes his friend, his ticket out, has gotten him. And he's probably thinking, I'm just going to rot here in jail. There's no way out. And I can assure you that jail at this time was not like the jails we have today. But we know enough about Joseph's God. Remember this, our God, to know that the story isn't over. Now we're going to look at the upside. After 2 years of waiting, he's released. Now, how did this happen? His knucklehead friend, this cupbearer, he finally remembers him. Pharaoh, king, he had a weird dream. And we've all heard of this weird dream. 7 skinny cows eat 7 fat cows, 7 thin heads of grain eat 7 full heads of grain. And I had to think, now, do you have weird dreams? We all probably have weird dreams. And my wife, she'll tell me sometime dreams she's had, and I'll tell her the ones I've had if I can remember them. A lot of the time I cannot remember what the dream is. But I can tell you, mine are so weird, I don't want somebody interpreting my dream at all. I don't want to know what all went into that dream, if you will. But this cupbearer, he hears about this dream that the king has, and he's trying to find somebody to interpret that dream, and a light goes off. I was in prison with this guy, and he could interpret dreams. And he tells him about Joseph. And I'm thinking here now, this is kind of to feather his own nest. He wants to get back in good with the king. Because remember, the king had him locked up earlier. So he said, well, if I tell him about Joseph and Joseph can do this, then I'm probably in for life. And we see in Genesis 41:14, so Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed his clothes, he came before Pharaoh. He's able to interpret Pharaoh's weird dream and speaks to what's going to happen in Egypt for the next 14 years. There's going to be 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. We've heard the story many, many times. But Pharaoh was so impressed with him, he promotes him to second in command. Now, you're talking about a turnaround in somebody's life. And we see this in Genesis 41, verses 41 through 43. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took his signet ring from his finger, put it on Joseph's finger, dressed him in robes of fine linen, and put a gold chain around his neck. He had him ride in a chariot as his second in command, and men shouted before him, make way. Thus he put him in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Now, is this kind of starting to sound familiar? In his family as the kid brother, as a slave in his master's house, as a prisoner in jail, and now in Pharaoh's service. Remember what I said? Joseph always rises to the top. At 30 years old, he's second in command of a powerful nation where he started as a slave. However, his complications aren't over with. There's a downside. He's now almost 40. Egypt's in the midst of a terrible famine. But Joseph's plan is working. He has conserved food during the 7 years of plenty. And to Joseph, everything is right in the world. And it reminds me of what Julia Roberts said in the movie Pretty Woman, color me happy. So I would say Joseph is happy as he can be right now. He's got the world by the tail. However, we see in Genesis 42, verses 6 through 8, something unexpected happens. Now Joseph was the governor of the land, the one who sold grain to all its people. So when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. Remember his dream? As soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. "Where do you come from?" he asked. "From the land of Canaan," they replied, "to buy food." Although Joseph recognized his brothers, they did not recognize him. These were probably the last people on earth he wanted to see. And there he was, face to face. And they didn't recognize him because it had been about 22 years. And then the next four chapters tells of Joseph's struggles with this reunion. We're going to look at three chapters. Chapter 42, verse 24, says about Joseph, he turned away from them and began to weep. Chapter 43, verse 30, he hurried out and looked for a place to weep. He went into his private room and wept there. Chapter 45, verse 2, he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him and Pharaoh's household heard about it. But Joseph's story doesn't end down. He does the right thing, and he turns it around. Now we're going to the upside. Joseph and his family are truly reunited. Joseph finally reveals to his brothers who he is, and I'm sure after they picked themselves up off of the floor at this revelation, because they didn't know, he explains to them that he finally understands how God took the evil they did and turned it around to help them all. And we see this in Genesis 45, 5 through 7. "And now do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now there has been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years there will not be plowing and reaping, but God has sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance." And then Joseph tells them to go get their dad, the rest of the family, the wives, the sons, and the daughters. And Pharaoh even tells them to use his carts. And when I read about this, all of this going on and the way it's happening and what's happening with the family, all of them getting together, I remember an old TV show. I know you young people won't remember it, but years ago there was a show called The Jeffersons, and they were moving on up. That was their theme song, Moving On Up. I remember it very, very well. Excellent show, comedy show, but it was a lot of fun to watch. So this is what's happening with Joseph's family. They are moving on up. Now we know from the rest of the story, long after Jacob and all of the 12 sons are dead, that God used this to preserve this family line and one of those brothers, Judah, to become a nation that would bring Jesus into the world at just the right place and at just the right time. What more appropriate statement could Joseph make? My life is complicated. My God is faithful. Maybe you can identify with that statement, at least the first half of it. But maybe you're in one of those up times in your life, and looking back, you can see where God's hand was in it and God was faithful. But that can't be everyone. Some of you are in that downtime. You're like Joseph. He was hated by his brothers, sold into slavery, in prison for a crime he didn't commit, dealing with family crisis. To you, the story of Joseph should say, take heart. God is still in control. Joseph was in your shoes and worse at age 17, 25, 30, 40, and beyond. For all of us, I think there are two lessons that we don't want to miss or ignore in this story. Complications scare us, not God. God had a plan for Joseph's life, much bigger than him, to redeem mankind from sin through Jesus Christ. God wasn't deterred by Joseph's brothers, by the slavery, by prison, by family conflicts. This is the God who spoke planets and life into existence. And do you really think God, can you really think and hear God saying, "Oh no, Joseph is in jail. What am I going to do now?" Not very likely. God isn't scared of the complications in my life either, or your life. When I get complications in my life, some more severe than others, it oftentimes scares me. But I have to realize God's not scared. God isn't thrown a curve. In Genesis 40:23, he says, "The chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph. He forgot him." But you never see God forget Joseph. And guess what? He doesn't forget us either. When we look at Joseph's story, we can see the hand of God moving through his complicated life. How it all worked together to bring Joseph and his family where they needed to be to survive. And God was never scared by those complications. Remember, you and I serve the same God as Joseph. Now, the second lesson is this. Complications shouldn't cause us to compromise. So many times in Joseph's story, he had the opportunity to compromise what he knew was right. Sleeping with Potiphar's wife, taking credit for interpreting Pharaoh's dreams instead of giving credit to God, having his brothers killed, or at least make them slaves. But he never did. Complications would not cause him to compromise right and wrong. He knew right was always right, wrong was always wrong. And did you notice every place he went, his reputation and his character went before him and helped or made him rise to the top? And that's what God needs from us today. People who will not compromise on right and wrong. God needs you to be above compromising right and wrong, even when your life gets complicated. There's a wonderful promise in Scripture written a few thousand years after Joseph, inspired by God, written by a descendant of Joseph's baby brother Benjamin. We know him as Paul, and he wrote in Romans 8:28, what we heard earlier, "And we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose." Joseph didn't have these words to rely on. Or maybe he did. Seems like Joseph intuitively knew that promise at least at the end of the story in Genesis 50:20 when he says, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." How much more fortunate are we to know this promise throughout our lives. In all things, God works for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purpose. So let's hold to that promise and live what could very well be Joseph's motto. It says, "My life is complicated. My God is faithful." I want to ask you to say that with me. My life is complicated. My God is faithful. If you have a need this morning, prayer request, Or if you'd like to be baptized today, I would invite you to come forward as we stand and as we sing.
My hope is built on nothing less.